We are going to sort out the facts on vitamin D this hour after two studies linked vitamin D levels to preventing disease but had conflicting conclusions when it came to whether we should be taking vitamin D supplements. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 8th. We'll talk with a doctor who has done extensive vitamin D research, and we will welcome your questions and your experiences for him. Do you take vitamin D supplements? Have you experienced any noticeable health effects? What questions do you have about vitamin D? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Dr. Neil Binkley is a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He has done extensive research on vitamin D and nutrition, particularly as it relates to bone health. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being here. Well, the New York Times last week reported on these two major studies linking low levels of vitamin D to disease. The first by Dutch researchers in collaboration with scientists at Harvard and Oxford concluded that vitamin D protects against major diseases. The second study by researchers from Stanford and several European universities was more nuanced. While they concluded vitamin D could protect against a lot of major disease, they could not find convincing evidence that vitamin D supplements affected the outcomes. I don't know what to make of these studies, Doctor. What do you make of them?
Well, I think you've done a nice selection of the controversy of where we're at right now with vitamin D. And just to share with you, it's unsurprising that we're seeing these conflicting studies because the medical literature is publishing roughly 12 studies every day related to vitamin D. And so it's really kind of unsurprising that we're getting different results. I think a big thing to be aware of is that low vitamin D or vitamin D deficiency really is exceptionally common. And depending on how you define low vitamin D and depending on what population you choose to study, somewhere between a third and a half of that population is going to be low in vitamin D.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. So let's just say it's a third. And then if you have 100 people with disease A or disease B in that population, about a third of them are going to be low in vitamin D. And so therefore, you can relate disease A and disease B to low vitamin D status. And that was what the first study with heart disease, cancers, those are associational studies. And there's lots of these associational studies out there. And because vitamin D probably affects virtually all of our tissues, you can then make nice hypotheses that say low vitamin D is causally related to these diseases, when in fact it's probably just an association.
I see. So all of these people who had heart disease or other things might also coincidentally have had low vitamin D because so many people have low vitamin D.
And furthermore, if you're ill with heart disease, cancer, etc., you're probably not going to the beach and laying out in the sun. And that's where humans were supposed to get most of our vitamin D, is we lived outdoors for most of the time that people have been on this planet, and therefore we made vitamin D when the sun hits our skin. And we don't do that much anymore, and furthermore, we've been advised to wear sunscreen and sunblock, and that prevents vitamin D production in our skin. So it's kind of, I think, potentially a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have a disease, you're not eating well, you're not out in the sun, you're therefore more likely to be low in vitamin D. And I think that that's probably why we see all of these studies that associate low vitamin D status with every disease literally from A to Z.
Interesting. Well, the second study also Well, it said it could help in terms of other diseases. Questioned whether vitamin D was all that important to bone health. And you've done a lot of research on that. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's real clear that severe vitamin D deficiency is bad for bones. And then you get into the definition of what's severe and what's insufficiency, if that even exists. But that's really how vitamin D deficiency was first recognized, mm-hmm. and that was rickets. So back in the 1800s, somewhere between 80 and 90% of children in the industrialized cities of Europe had rickets. And rickets is just soft bones. And so they had a bowing and deformities of their bones. And the reason for that is that they didn't have enough vitamin D. They lived in crowded, narrow streets. They weren't out in the sun. There was coal pollution over the top of them. And as a result, they were very vitamin D deficient. And if they, therefore, didn't absorb calcium, our bones get soft. And that's basically what rickets is. The adult form of that is called osteomalacia. It still exists. It's fairly rare. So clearly, severe deficiency is related to adverse bone health consequences. It is also probably true that more modest deficiency increases the bone loss that we experience with age, osteoporosis, and therefore increases our fracture risk. And it's possibly true that vitamin D is important for our muscle function. And if our muscles aren't working optimally as we age, we're more likely to fall down. And if we fall down, bones break. So I think it's probable that there is a relationship here with bone, muscle, falls, fractures. The question really is, what's the right number? How do we define this? What cut point should we be going for? And I think that second study basically said there's not good evidence in the prospective randomized supplementation studies that say this is the right amount, this is what we should be taking. My bias for that is related to the radical concept that we're not all the same.
What's the conventional wisdom now, given all we know, and yes, many and conflicting studies, should we supplement with vitamin D or not?
Yeah, and so I think that the experts on this are really all over the board. And you will find people who staunchly believe that we get plenty. You will find other people who vehemently argue that we all need to be taking supplements. And I actually like the Goldilocks principle of not too hot, not too cold, just right. Then you get into, okay, what's the right amount? What's the right blood level that we should be shooting for? And there is not consensus. I personally think that anyone who says, I know the right answer for vitamin D, I just don't think we're smart enough for that yet. But applying the common sense principle, common sense says that humans lived outdoors and made vitamin D when the sun hit our skin. And we did that for years and years and years before about 5,000 years ago, we put on clothing and moved inside. And so let's look at people who are out in the sun making their vitamin D normally, people like lifeguards, surfers. And I think there was a landmark study in that regard a couple of years ago where they went into Tanzania and actually found hunter-gatherer peoples, the last few hundred folks who are living the way we were for thousands of years. And they got blood out of them and found their vitamin D level was about 40. In their blood. And I think that those folks are telling us that that's the right level to target. And that is kind of a middle of the road. It's not too low. It's not too high. If you will, it's just right. So I think Goldilocks kind of got it right.
Yeah. All right. But you know what? I'm gonna take a short break and then we'll continue talking about how do we make sure our vitamin D level in our blood is 40 and whether we should... Let me sit in the sun more or maybe take a vitamin D supplement or not. And we'll welcome your questions about vitamin D and what we know and what we don't about vitamin D. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with a doctor, Dr. Neil Binkley, professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, who has done extensive research on vitamin D and nutrition. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about vitamin D during this hour and the controversy over vitamin D studies. Two major studies last week linked a lack of vitamin D to disease. Very quickly, a slew of other reports highlighted studies claiming the opposite or downplaying results. We are talking with a vitamin D researcher, a physician, to help us figure out the facts. And we welcome your questions and your experiences. Do you take vitamin D supplements, and have you experienced any noticeable health effects? Do you believe that vitamin D or perhaps other supplements are overhyped, or do they really improve health? Let us know your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dr. Neil Binkley is a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Before we go into some of the specifics on what do we do about finding out our vitamin D levels and or supplementing our vitamin D levels, I meant to bring up that UW-Madison has a long, long history with vitamin D. Vitamin D was discovered by a UW-Madison professor, wasn't it?
In essence, that's correct. Professor Steenbach published in 1924 that he could cure rickets in rats by exposing them to radiation, and that then led to the discovery that when you radiate our skin, for example, the ultraviolet in the sun, that we make vitamin D in our skin.
I see. So we used to maybe have more vitamin D in our systems before we hold ourselves up in buildings and homes and maybe put slathered sunscreen on before going outside?
Exactly right. Yeah. You mentioned supplements before, and I do subscribe to the radical concept that we're supposed to eat food.
Yeah.
But I think vitamin D may be a place where our diet falls down because there are not many foods that have much vitamin D in them because we didn't need it. We lived outdoors. We made it every day when the sunlight hit our skin. So today, when we're not doing that, we have these large proportions of the population that are low in D.
Yeah, and they put vitamin D in our milk and such, don't they? But that's still not enough.
Correct. So the regulations basically limit the amount of vitamin D to roughly 100 units per serving. And if you are aiming, for example, for 1,000 units per day, just to keep the number simple, that means you would need to drink 10 glasses of milk a day.
No, thanks.
Probably not going to happen.
Yeah. But maybe I would take a vitamin D supplement then. But I was also going to ask you about there's vitamin D2 and vitamin D3. Yeah. What's the diff?
Yeah. So they're chemically different. Vitamin D2 is a synthetic preparation that was created about 100 years ago. And vitamin D3 is the kind that we all make when we're out in the sun and the sun hits our skin. So I think it's logical that humans are set up to run on vitamin D3. There is a little bit of data out there that says that D3 is more potent at raising our blood levels. And because of that data combined with the logic and common sense that says this is the kind that we are supposed to get, that's the kind that I routinely recommend is vitamin D3.
Well, I have many more questions, but so do our listeners. So let's go to Sarah in Madison. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about breastfeeding and vitamin D levels. I was breastfeeding for 2.5 years before I got pregnant again. And at that time, my midwife suggested I get my vitamin D levels checked, and they were very low. It was very low. It was in the teens. And so I started taking some vitamin D supplements. And I guess my question is, does breastfeeding have an effect on vitamin D levels? Thank you.
That's a good question, and no, it really doesn't. Actually, breastfeeding is still occasionally associated with rickets in the infant, And the reason for that is because mom is severely vitamin D deficient. And so if mom is severely deficient, then her breast milk is D deficient, and therefore the infant becomes vitamin D deficient. But it's not that the breastfeeding causes vitamin D loss. It's, again, going back to it's common in our population to have low vitamin D levels for the reasons that we've just discussed. So it's not causally related. It's not caused by the breastfeeding.
Okay, Sarah?
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Our next caller is Q in Madison. Hi, Q.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
I had a comment. I have multiple sclerosis. I've been getting a large amount of sun since I was diagnosed January of 1995. And I was extremely healthy from multiple sclerosis through 1998, where I rode my recumbent bicycle, L.A., to Jasper, Alberta, Canada, back 8,000 miles in 6 months.
Well, good for you, Q. So your experience is what, that the vitamin D helps you?
That vitamin D helps me. From natural production, from my own production from sun, I also took vitamin D supplements, and then I had chronic progressive multiple sclerosis, and eventually my legs started having problems, and so I couldn't do the exercise anymore with my legs.
Well, I'm sorry about that. Is there...
I'm flat on my back.
Yeah, I'm sorry, very sorry about that, but I think he was saying that the exercise, the sunshine, and the vitamin D supplements was really helpful for him.
There is also, and again, these are associational studies, but there is some association of low vitamin D levels with MS.
Oh.
And there is a rodent model of MS that actually is prevented by active vitamin D. So there is, if you will, some evidence or at least some association of low vitamin D status with MS. And so I think maybe what the caller is alluding to is in individuals who have MS, it makes even more sense to have a vitamin D level in the 40-ish range. And to know that, you probably do need to have your blood level checked.
Yeah, so as you mentioned before, we're all different, so it's all individual. My husband, who had some cardiovascular disease detected, was prescribed. He just buys it over the counter, but his cardiologist said, you should get some vitamin D. Is there a current association that's helpful?
Yeah, again, those are associational studies, but you can infer that low vitamin D status is associated with an increased level of inflammation in our body. And inflammation, in fact, is associated with the development of atherosclerosis and vascular disease. Now, the few prospective studies out there imply, at least, that vitamin D supplementation doesn't improve cardiovascular disease.
Does not.
Does not.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those studies, in my opinion, are imperfect in that most of them are simply prescribing a single dose to everybody. And if you take 1,000 units and I take 1,000 units and Jane Doe and John Smith takes 1,000 units, we are not going to get to the same blood level of vitamin D, probably due to differences in absorption of it and differences in how rapidly we use it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think we need to go back to saying, what is my blood level and how much do I need as a given individual, rather than just saying one size fits all.
Should... Dr. Binkley, all of us get our blood levels tested for vitamin D?
That's a great question. It's incredibly, incredibly controversial. We're measuring tons of vitamin D levels, and is that the right thing to do? And the short answer is nobody knows. In my opinion, I think it makes sense to get a blood level checked if we have certain diseases. So if we have osteoporosis, if we're older and we are falling, there is some associational data and some suggestive prospective studies that vitamin D might reduce cancer. And so I think if I had cancer, I would want to know that my blood level was 40, MS, as we alluded to. But I think before we come out and say the entire population ought to be screened for vitamin D deficiency, first we need to know what the right level is. And, you know, in my opinion, it's 30 to 40, but that's controversial. And secondly, we need to show that the amount of money that we're spending on measuring the entire population is money well spent, because there's only so many dollars in the pot. And I think that sort of the reflex was, let's just measure vitamin D levels on everybody. And I think that's wrong. I think we need to focus it on people who we know have conditions that are associated with not enough vitamin D.
We are talking about vitamin D and recent research on vitamin D that might raise more questions than answers. And we are welcoming your questions. And maybe Dr. Neil Binkley will have an answer for you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. The New York Times reported new research last week showing that people with low vitamin D levels are more likely to die from cancer or heart disease or to suffer from a host of other illnesses. A second study suggested high levels of vitamin D protected people from many illnesses, from diabetes to stroke, but also concluded that there was no convincing evidence that taking vitamin D pills affected any of the outcomes. We are trying to sort all this out. What do we make of all this? And wonder if we should take vitamin D supplements or not. Should we have our vitamin D levels tested? What does vitamin D do for us and not do for us? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Tuesday, April 8th. We are talking with Dr. Neil Binkley, a professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's done extensive research on vitamin D and nutrition, particularly as it relates to bone health. And Dr. Binkley, before we go back to the phones, we spent much of the first half hour talking about the conflicting studies and information on vitamin D. It seems that we've had this back and forth going on for some time now. Why is it so difficult to get conclusive evidence either way?
Great question. And I think probably a major part of the reason is that despite the fact that we've known about vitamin D now for almost 100 years, our knowledge is still rapidly evolving about what the blood levels mean. And I like to compare it to blood fat and cholesterol. So roughly 60 years ago, it was recognized that having too much fat in our blood was bad. It caused heart attacks and vascular disease. And since then, the cholesterol panels, the lipid panels, have become much, much more sophisticated. And I think that's pretty much where we're at with vitamin D today. We're measuring 25-hydroxy-D in the blood. And I think that's kind of analogous to measuring total blood fat. And I think we're going to be having what I like to call vitamin D panels, analogous to the lipid panels, in the next few years, where we are much more sophisticated, and that's going to advance our knowledge of vitamin D. And so you're right. We've known about this for a long time, but the tests for it are still evolving. And I think we're now on the cusp of being quite a bit smarter.
Yeah, man, just as they're evolving for these other conditions as well. Interesting. So the next few years, we might have those panels.
I hope so.
And in the meantime, if we suspect we might not get the amount of vitamin D we should be getting through our diet, should we take, and how much should we take, of a vitamin D supplement?
Right. That's really the million-dollar question. And I think in our current state of not having adequate information to give a precise answer for everybody, simple middle-of-the-road numbers make sense. And I think that number is 1,000 international units of vitamin D3. I think it's reasonable that pretty much all of us take 1,000 units of D3, particularly here in Wisconsin, where roughly from October through March, even if you choose to go out and lay in the snow with no clothes on, you're not going to be making any vitamin D because the sun's rays are so low that all of the ultraviolet B is absorbed in our atmosphere. So during the winter, even if you're outside, we're not making vitamin D. But with 1,000 international units a day, we're not going to get into toxicity problems.
And that's what I was going to ask now. Some people are taking 10,000 units of vitamin D3. Are they hurting themselves?
Well, it depends. And there are people who don't absorb well. People who have had parts of their bowel removed, for example, known malabsorptive issues. And so those people often need very high levels. But there are some suggestive data that taking high doses of vitamin D, or at least getting high blood levels of vitamin D, might be associated with some rare cancers. It might increase cancer risk. Taking huge doses, 500,000 units in one fell swoop, clearly does increase the risk for broken bones. It increases the risk for falling. It kind of says that humans were never designed to take 500,000 units of vitamin D in one day. So, yes, you can get too much of anything.
I had no idea people were taking 500,000 units.
Wow. That was a clinical trial from Australia.
Oh. Well, we have so many callers. Let's go to the phones. Tracy in Adams is with us. Hello, Tracy.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a problem with the sunlight. I suffer from PLES, which is photolight eruption syndrome. I have a hard time processing UVA, UVB lights, and I drive truck for a living. And I've been, courtesy of the VA, taking vitamin D3 for many, many years, and I cannot keep my D level up to save me. When I break out with the PLES, it's usually in the early spring, January, February, and no amount of sunblock, of course, being a natural redhead and very pale-skinned and from northern genealogy standpoint, it's unphenomenal, the problem that I've had trying to get my vitamin D3 level up to where it's accepted normal.
Yeah, so how much vitamin D do you take, vitamin D3?
I take 5,000 milligrams daily.
Yeah. And, oh boy, what an issue. She's allergic to sunlight.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that 5,000 units is not a hugely atypical requirement. So I think, again, when we get these vitamin D panels, we are going to find that people who require 4, 5, and 6,000 units per day to get blood levels of 30 to 40 probably either are people who don't absorb D well, or other people who use it up more rapidly. And again, it's my opinion that when we get these panels, we're going to be much more able to say you need 6,000 units to get a level of 40, whereas Jane Doe may need 600 units. We're not all the same. So I it personally doesn't bother me when my patients need higher amounts to get the right blood levels. I just ask them to take however much we need to get the right blood levels. So, and the sun piece, you know, a long time ago I learned to not fight battles that I can't win. And the dermatologists are telling us to avoid the sun. Okay, if you want to avoid the sun, I'm fine with that. Just take supplemental vitamin D to get your level up to where you need to be.
Yeah. I did talk to a. I don't remember if he was a vitamin D expert. I think he at least was recommending that in terms of mood, that if you would, in the wintertime or maybe it was other times of the year, just go outside for 10 or 15 minutes without the sunblock on and that you would absorb and then put on the sunblock. You're saying that the dermatologists are saying no, don't do that.
Well, I think that you can find dermatologists who say don't do that. But moreover, this sort of one-size-fits-all recommendation simply doesn't work. I've certainly read and heard these recommendations. Go out for 15 minutes with your face and hands exposed and everything's going to be fine. That's just a vanilla type of recommendation that's obviously can't apply to everybody. Yeah. You know, simple things. What time of day? What's the cloud cover? What latitude are you at? What color is your skin? Et cetera, et cetera. So these simple one-size-fits-all things, I don't think that makes sense.
Tracy, thank you for calling, and good luck to you. Janice in Viroqua is with us. Hi, Janice.
Thank you. I'm so glad to finally have a chance to ask someone my question. I have had chronic depression for many, many years, and then when I was diagnosed with MS, my doctor recommended that I take vitamin D3, but he recommended that I take higher doses 2 or 3 times a week rather than taking the same dose every day. So I take it 2 or 3 times a week, and then I don't take any on the other days. And I wanted to know if the doctor has any comments on why that would be.
Well, how high is high?
10,000.
Okay. There really isn't enough evidence to say that a certain amount daily is better than higher doses intermittently. So we don't have good data. I mentioned the study before where they gave 500,000 units once, and that was bad. Going back to the common sense approach, where we were designed to make a little bit of vitamin D every day by making it in our skin, my usual approach, rather than to give the higher doses intermittently, is to give whatever dose gets us to 40 or thereabouts. And if you're taking 30,000 units a week, which is what it sounds like, that would be somewhere in the range of 5,000 units every day. I don't think you're harming yourself by taking, I don't know if you're harming yourself by taking 10,000 units 3 times a week. I doubt it. But it seems logical to me to simply buy 5,000 and take it every day.
Yeah. Thank you, Janice, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dr. Neil Binkley, professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's done a lot of research on vitamin D and nutrition, particularly as it relates to bone health, and we are talking with him about the recent, ongoing controversy over vitamin D studies. Two major studies out last week linked a lack of vitamin D to disease, and quickly, though, a slew of reports disputed the findings or clarified the findings or highlighted studies claiming the opposite. We are trying to figure out the facts with Dr. Neil Binkley and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 8th. We are talking with Dr. Neil Binkley, who is a professor of medicine at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, about vitamin D. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Before we go back to the phones, Dr. Binkley, if someone just tuned in right now and they did see these two major studies that were reported on last week about linking vitamin D to disease and low levels, people having more disease if they had low levels of vitamin D, what is the takeaway that they should, what is the your advice when looking at these studies and what it says about vitamin D?
Yeah, stay tuned. Yeah, is my advice. So the field is very controversial right now. There isn't a right or wrong answer. You're going to continue to see these conflicting studies. And in the meantime, recognize that we were supposed to get vitamin D from the sun. when we made it in our skin. We're not doing that much anymore. And as such, for most of us, taking a reasonable dose of a supplement daily, perhaps 1,000 IUs of D3, is a reasonable middle-of-the-road approach.
I did want to ask you about cod liver oil. That was my mother's solution. She didn't want me to get rickets,
right?
And it was awful. And do people still take that today?
Not very many in this country. As you probably vividly remember, it tastes terrible. I don't recommend that my patients use cod liver oil. It is a great source of vitamin D. However, it is very high in preformed vitamin A or retinol. And there is some associational evidence, primarily from the Nordic countries, that too much vitamin A might actually cause weakening of the bones and contribute to an increased risk of osteoporosis and fractures. Now, that's kind of an overstatement, but if a person wants to take a vitamin D supplement, I advise them to take a vitamin D supplement, not take, squeezed cod livers.
Yeah, cod liver oil is having the opposite effect, perhaps.
Potentially.
Yeah. A caller wants to know, how does vitamin D interact with other vitamins, especially vitamin K? We're only just starting to recognize that vitamin K is important.
Well, great question. I spent about a decade of my research career trying to prove that vitamin K was important for bone health and failing.
It is not.
Well, there are, again, associational studies largely from Japan that relate low vitamin K status to better bone health, to poorer bone health, and therefore vitamin K supplementation might be good for our bones. There are three good prospective studies that do not find that more vitamin K is good for our bones. I wish it were. We could not prove that, nor could researchers in Canada or in Boston. So I wish vitamin K was the solution for osteoporosis. I fear that it's not.
Oh. Well, those little chocolate supplements have that I sometimes take, not regularly, have calcium, vitamin D, and vitamin K. Are you supposed to put all that stuff together?
People were designed to eat food.
So
have a well-balanced diet, eat good food. Again, it's hard to get enough vitamin D in our diet because we weren't supposed to have to eat it. We were supposed to make it.
Let's go to Margot in Madison. Hello, Margot.
Hello. Dr. Binkley, I'm your patient and your admirer, and I just wanted to add a couple of things that I haven't heard anybody say that I believe are true, and maybe you do too. I don't know. The idea of sun absorption I wanted to address, and then the studies. And for the sun absorption issue, I believe that if we don't have oil on our skin, we don't synthesize vitamin D as effectively. And we are a society that bathes, and some people could say overbathes. Taking a shower every single day in the winter might impede that. The other thing is that as we age, we don't synthesize a lot of things as well, including vitamin D from the sun. B12 is another thing we don't synthesize very well, and a lot of people need it for MS and other neurological issues. But the form you take it in is another thing, and that gets me into the studies. I'd really like to know, when they study a supplement, what are they studying? Are they studying something that is a very high grade? Are they studying vitamin D3 or just vitamin D? Are they studying D in a liquid form that is far more absorbable? I take a liquid form, high quality, from Biotics Research Firm.
Margot, you've given us so much to talk about and our time is so limited, let me ask about liquid form versus pill form. Do we know if one is better than the other?
Yeah, there were lots of questions in there. And the short answer is that we don't have good data that says that taking a liquid form, taking a form from company A, B, or C is necessarily better than the other. There is a limited amount of data that makes physiologic sense because vitamin D is fat soluble. It makes sense that it might be better absorbed if we take it with a meal. So that makes sense. The whole issue of how much sun, what we have on our skin, that I think is just not well understood. Even in individuals who are out in the sun a ton, like surfers, not everybody has the same vitamin D blood level. I think that probably speaks to differences in genetics and probably how well we make it in our skin and how rapidly we degrade it. You mentioned that as we age, our skin becomes less efficient at producing vitamin D. I often say that humans are not fine wine. We do not improve with advancing age.
Darn it.
And that is certainly true with our skin. Our skin becomes less efficient at producing vitamin D as we age.
Hey, when I went on vacation to sunny Belize last week and got too much sun, did I store up vitamin D, or is that only good for a day or
you
so?
You probably make a little bit that does get stored. It probably is stored primarily in our fat. How well
stored a lot then? Yes.
how well we can get that out when we need it is unclear.
Margo, thank you for the call. We have another caller that I want to be able to get on. Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Morning. My question has to do with what foods might help you absorb vitamin D, and would that affect the calcium level in your blood? I have an elevated calcium level. I eat a lot of salmon and heavy greens, and I'm wondering if that has an impact, if the absorption of vitamin D.
Again, it's hard to give medical advice without knowing everything. The high blood calcium level, that needs to be explained. It is possible to get high blood calcium levels from taking largely industrial strength doses of vitamin D, or from individuals who have uncommon conditions, for example, sarcoidosis or tuberculosis. As far as foods that have vitamin D, you mentioned salmon. That is a good source. Fatty fish is a good source. Fortified dairy products is a reasonable source. But again, it's hard to get to the 1,000 international unit number simply by diet.
Yeah, and are there foods that help you absorb vitamin D?
We're not sure. It's poorly studied, but again, because it's a fat-soluble vitamin, taking it with a meal that has some fat does make some sense.
Well, in our final minute, what's on the horizon when it comes to vitamin D research?
I think that the big deal is this vitamin D panel that I talked about. And there's a lot of interest in being more sophisticated at how to measure it. A topic that we did not get into is potential genetic or racial differences in bioavailable vitamin D. And I think that with more sophisticated measures and then the clinical availability of those measures, I think we will be making some real progress. And I don't think that's a pipe dream. I think it's within the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for being here. Dr. Neil Binkley, professor of medicine at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Thanks to Marika Saval for producing this program. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and to Christy Taylor for on-air production and direction. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.